Please note, the opinions and perspectives expressed on the following show are solely those of the host and their guest. These opinions and views do not reflect Ruckus Avenue Radio or Dash Radio. Listener discretion is advised.
Hey guys, what's up? This is your girl Jyoti K, and this is Jyoti K Uncut on Ruckus Avenue Radio with Dash Radio. Today, this episode is really, really, really close to my heart. It's about addiction and mental health. And we have a special guest today. We have Dr. Jasmine Singh with us. Hi, Jasmine.
Hello.
I am so excited you're here.
I'm so, so excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
Finally, we finally got a date.
Yes.
And then, of course, we have Lucy Legend, our co-host.
Yes. Hello, guys.
Yes. I've been like telling Lucy how excited I was about you coming.
Oh. Yeah, Jasmine.
Yeah. I have, as you guys know, that I did my addiction episode, and that was really, really close to my heart, and it was really hard for me to do, but very necessary, because I feel like people have so many assumptions. I'm sure people have heard things, and I'm sure there's people out there that, you know, are going through the same problems as me, and I just wanted to step forward and at least be like, hey, you know what? My life might seem all glitz and glamour on Instagram, but this is what I'm coming from. This is why I am the way I am. And I really wanted to do something about mental health because that does correlate with mental health. And then, So there was Jen K. It was Jen K. 83.
Yes.
Right? Yes. What is her real name?
I don't know.
Oh, okay. Well, Jen K. 83. She messages me frequently. Very nice. Very sweet. And she's like, hey, you should have the Jazzy Doc come on your podcast. And I was like, I like the name Jazzy Doc. Let me see who Jazzy Doc is, you know? So I thoroughly went on Jasmine's profile, and I was like, yo, she's dope. Like, she's into psychiatry. She actually is. What TV show did you go on?
So I do TV. I go on to the live TV shows in Fresno for Central Valley Today.
Okay, yeah.
And that's so where I have live segments on there every so often on mental health awareness.
That's amazing. Yeah, and those are the ones that I saw, and I'm like, I need her on our show because my number one listening is South Asian.
Yeah.
And I feel like it coming from an actual doctor that is of our own, I feel like it'll reach out to more. Like, I can reach out to as much as I can, but I feel like some people need that. That's a doctor saying that, you know, like they need affirmation. So Jasmine, tell us why did you get into psych?
So I got into psych during medical school, actually. So I was a third year medical student. And in that year, we start rotations in the hospital. So the first 2 years were basically just reading books all the time. Yeah. And third year, you start seeing patients. And so one of my first rotations was psychiatry. And I had no idea about mental health, about hallucinations, about drugs. I had no clue.
Yeah.
But I saw that there was just so much suffering. And it just seemed that this patient population really, really didn't know. They didn't have enough. They didn't have enough resources. There wasn't enough attention given to that field of medicine. And even the medications, I thought, this is not as many medications as we have for something like hypertension or diabetes. Mm-hmm. And it just seemed like such an underserved population. So I thought this is the worst type of suffering, and it naturally just awoke compassion in me for those patients. And I wanted to help.
This is what I want to do.
Yeah. I want to treat these people. And so on that rotation, I learned that people have severe mental illnesses in which they can't decipher what's real and what's not. That's called being psychotic. So when they have those illnesses, they try to cope with them in different ways. It can even be substances and various other ways. But essentially, they can't work. They can't make a living. They become homeless. It can sometimes be victimized. And so it's just a cycle of untreated mental illness making their life so difficult. And so learning that, I just thought, my goodness, if we could just treat the mental illness, maybe we could make their life so much better. And so
if you give light to that problem, the root of
right? Exactly, to the root of it. So since then, I've become a resident at UCSF in Fresno, and I'm a fourth year resident now in psychiatry, and I've seen lots of other patients, not as severe, and severe as well. Mm-hmm. And so I'm still learning. I'm still really excited about it. The passion in me for mental health and awareness grows every single day. And so, that's
how many years ago was that when you
That was 6 years ago.
See, so 6 years ago, and people are talking more about it now, but people are thinking it's just like, it just happened now that everyone's like, oh, there's mental health all of a sudden, right? That's you 6 years ago, but this is going back and back and back, you know what I mean? This, so I think, like, just like people talk about, oh, addiction, you choose to be an addict, or, mm-hmm. you know, like somebody who has anxiety just chooses that, you know yeah. what I mean? And I, so that's like why I wanted to ask you, like, how long ago did you see these things? Because I really do feel like people think that people just make things up. Like
mental, they do. Yeah. For some reason, there's this huge misconception that mental health issues are a choice. It's yeah. by mm-hmm. our will. Mm-hmm. But quite frankly, people have been mentally ill since the Middle Ages.
Yeah.
There's records of people with schizophrenia in the Middle Ages. So as long as there's been humans
yeah.
who have been communicating and been alive, there has been mental illness. So this is... Unfortunately, this has just come to our forefront now, but I think I'm optimistic things will just continue to improve and we can treat more mental illness.
Now, Jazzy, like talking about mental illness, you know, because
yes.
we were talking about substance and drugs and how things, do you think that because each person is like, what do we call it? Each person has a mind of their own. Everyone's like,
right.
everyone has. So it's not like when you have a cough or when you have a flu, like a doctor can be like, you know, cough, this is a medication, this is what it is.
Right.
When you're a psychiatrist, I feel like it's even more challenging because people, you know, whatever they're taking is altering their brain in a different mm-hmm. way. So like mm-hmm. if they choose a drug, if they choose alcohol or something
sure.
like that. So is it something that constantly has to be treated differently and learning and just, you know, everyone individually?
Yes. So psychiatry... there's a new attention mm-hmm. on
yeah.
the importance of mental health mm-hmm. and psychiatry. And we don't know enough about the brain.
Yeah.
We're still learning. Every day, okay. so many studies come out about this new thing we learned about mm-hmm. the brain, this new neurotransmitter, mm-hmm. this receptor, how we can modulate it. This is all very cutting edge science. Mm-hmm. But as far as the brain is concerned, brain chemistry is changing all the time.
Yeah.
And there are things in our natural world, in our environment, that can increase our serotonin, increase our dopamine, mm-hmm. but also that can be done through substances and drugs. Mm-hmm. So all these different things are changing our brain chemistry, but mm-hmm. we don't know enough. We're learning,
yeah.
and we do know enough to make a difference. And I've seen some amazing yeah. healing happen for patients, but we're still learning.
Yeah.
So
it's constantly just learning and
yeah,
doing
constantly yeah. still learning. And also the diagnosis, a psychiatric diagnosis is difficult to make mm-hmm. because we don't have any blood tests.
Mm.
We don't have any x-rays.
Yeah.
There's no surgery or procedure or, you know, we just don't have that yet in psychiatry, like other fields of medicine.
Yeah.
So the way we diagnose, the way psychiatrists diagnose patients is through interviewing and mm-hmm. talking to patients. And it is from their story. They have to tell us what they
yeah.
feel. So you want to make sure people who are looking for mental health mm-hmm. or going to a psychiatrist, you want to make sure you want to be able to tell them everything because mm-hmm. something you leave out could alter a diagnosis. It could alter what kind of medicine. So it's very important to do that because that's our only tool.
Yeah.
So
that's great. So also we were talking about mental health stats. So there's different
yes.
types of status of mental health. So one of them being anxiety, which I hear all the time, like people are like, I'm getting anxiety. I'm getting anxiety.
yes.
And I was like, when I was younger, I'm like, shut up. No, you're not. Like, you know what I mean? And then when I started feeling anxiety as I've
yeah.
gotten older, it's
right.
kind of, you're like, oh shit, that's real.
It is.
Like,
it's real.
Yeah. It's a real thing.
It is.
So let us know, like, how does that kind of like affect your mental health as well?
Anxiety is defined as this excessive worry that just doesn't
mm-hmm.
go away.
Mm-hmm.
And you can have physical symptoms like sweaty palms or a racing heart, having palpitations. And it can lead to having trouble sleeping, having trouble focusing.
Yeah.
And so that's what anxiety is. But it's such a problem. It can just keep you in the house. You could get scared to go places.
Yeah, there's excessive amounts, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So uncontrolled, it can just totally increase. And it can become a huge problem. It's debilitating. There's 40 million American people suffering from anxiety. So,
and people just think it's like a couple minutes thing. Like,
no,
I've been like, I'm actually guilty of this. Like, I've had friends tell me like, I'm having anxiety. I'm like, shut up, calm down. You're just being annoying. But
yeah.
it like, but then as you've got get older, you're like, no, this is actually,
right.
you know, right. Like your parents are telling you like, just drink some water yeah. or something.
Go
or
eat something.
Go walk. Go take a walk or like, right. go get, like Lucy likes to say, go get some fresh air. But yeah, so that's kind of like, that was really surprising for me because I wanted to learn a lot about mental health. So I did mm-hmm. a lot of Googling and I'm like, oh wow, it's actually a thing.
It is. It is. And so I think it's great that you've recognized you had this lack of understanding or knowledge before. Mm-hmm. And then through experience and knowledge, you've found out, hey, this is actually a problem. And it really is.
Of course, especially because another form like for mental health is depression. So mm-hmm. I've been through depression and I didn't even know I was depressed. But
right.
dealing with my dad's addiction and I wanted to find out why he was doing it. I was right. so obsessed with it. I was mm-hmm. like, I was watching like documentaries about drugs. I was learning like, why is he doing it? His life was perfect. And
right.
just like trying to get to the root of the problem. And it was, there's no way you can really, like, I don't know what was really going through his head.
Right.
All I can do is make up scenarios. I'm mm-hmm. like, maybe mom was always putting him down. Maybe that's why he was depressed and he wanted to forget about it. Maybe he just was like, he had an addictive personality. He tried it once and he kept, then he just kept going and he couldn't stop.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just like so many different like scenarios that I feel like it's really hard to pinpoint things, you know? And I wasn't sure if that was the only, like in depression as well. So I'm obviously that my dad being that way made me depressed.
Yeah.
Then our family, you know, not going from one way to another. Like we started off so wealthy and this mm-hmm. and that, and then my dad getting into drugs, he didn't work as much, and then you know finances aren't being paid and
right.
that's depressing me. Mom and dad are fighting, that's depressing me. So depression really can take a toll on your mental health.
Absolutely, it really can. But just to look at, you know, your family scenario, and I must say it's very awesome of you and courageous of you to share this with
you.
The world.
Thank you.
Especially since it's such a stigmatized topic.
It took years for me to want to do it. I think you yeah. have to really be in a place where you're just like, fuck it. Like,
yeah.
you know what I mean? This is my truth and
yeah.
this is who I am.
Yeah.
You know?
And I think that's so important and healthy to stay in your truth and express something that is bothering you.
Of course.
And maybe it was, you know, for you to lead to the show and maybe someone really needs to hear your message or this message and it can help someone. So
of course, the amount of positivity that I got, I was shocked.
Wow.
I'm shocked. Like I was expecting like bad messages. Mm. Like, I mean, I got a couple here and there and like, stop blaming, you know, da-da. I'm like, no, I'm not blaming anybody.
Right.
I didn't choose my dad to be an addict. I didn't, yeah. I wasn't born to be like, I want my dad to be an addict. Like, no, I wasn't. My mom didn't come to this country to marry an addict.
Right.
My dad didn't go international to become an addict.
Right.
So it can happen to anyone.
It truly can happen to anyone.
And that's like the voice that I wanted to say. I'm like, me as an Indian woman, it mm-hmm. happened to me.
Yeah. And it's happening to many others.
Exactly.
And just going back to your, you know, your family story and how your finances and how that led to you feeling depressed. Look at the power of mental illness. It unraveled and can unravel a whole family. And it can affect so many people's well-being. One person's illness can affect their family, their friends, and society as a whole. So to those who think that mental illness isn't real or isn't anything, I would like to argue with you that yes, it is. And it's actually so powerful that it affects everyone around those who are sick.
Everyone, especially like my mom. So going into mental health, my mother, she was trying to tell herself that he was just drinking.
Right.
And I'm like, even if he's just drinking, this is a problem, you know,
yeah,
the way he's
yeah.
acting. And she was scared to tell other people because what will people say? You know,
yes.
what will our people say? What will people think?
Yeah.
I can't leave him. What will they say?
Right.
And I want to know, what are your thoughts about what will people say?
I hate that phrase.
Yeah, I hate, my whole life.
I don't say the word hate often, but what will people say? It just seems, I mean, who are you living for? Why are you?
Who are you living for? That is amazing.
Who are you living for? And why would you not want to live an authentic life? Why would you want to live a life that you're faking? It just, you know, being inauthentic can lead to anxiety and depression as well because you're not being true to yourself.
Exactly.
You're not expressing your feelings. You're not being who you are. So to me, what will people say? What will people think? It's a very culturally rooted phrase. Mm-hmm. It's something I've heard. It's something I've dealt with. But I think for me, and I think all of us, of this generation. We need to decide that that's not important for us. We need to do what's best for us and our well-being and our mental health. So I don't like that phrase. I even go as far as to say I hate that phrase, but it can be such a teacher to allow us to find the right way.
Of course, 100%. I think people need to stop worrying about what others will say and worry about your own mental health.
Yeah.
Worry about who cares what they'll say. They're still going to talk anyways.
Yes.
And you know, to bring up on that exact point, what will people say and depression and anxiety. For example, I grew up in a household where depression, anxiety, and all of that, it's not, it's like you need to overcome that.
Right.
you're thinking wrong. You need to wake up in the morning, say a prayer, be positive, do this, do that, you know? that's a household I grew up in, right? So when I moved out on my own, my roommate, somebody that's very close to me, she had anxiety, she had depression. And I at that point, I had not experienced anxiety. I had not really experienced depression. So there was an episode that something happened and she had an anxiety attack. When she had the anxiety, I will never forget. And years later, I recently apologized to her like probably like a year ago because I experienced it. When she was having this anxiety attack, she was hyperventilating. She's like, I'm having an anxiety attack. Turns blue, is going things, and she's just like freaking out. And it's over something really small. So I went over and I slapped her.
Oh my.
Across the face. And I will never forget that because when I experienced anxiety, I realized that it's something you can't control.
Yeah.
So I went over there and I slapped her and I said, stop being weak. I was like, go outside, get some fresh air, because that's always my thing.
Yeah.
Go outside, get some fresh air. I was like, get your thoughts together and just, you know, be positive. Yeah. I was like, you're being weak right now. And then it happened again and again. And she kept having these anxieties. And because of this experience that she went through, it was just, you know, it was just an ongoing cycle. And then from there, she got the depression. And then she wasn't coming out of her home and she wasn't doing this and she was doing that. Me being the, at the time, ignorant person because I didn't know what depression was. I didn't know what anxiety was. I went over there and I busted her door open. I was like, you know what? I was like, enough is enough. You need to get out of here. And I was like, this is it, blah, blah. And I think so many people out there coming from a household like that, you do grow up thinking that this is not real. This is not happening. This is somebody that's just weak. You know, that I was like, anxiety, you can overcome that. But we had a death in the family last year. And when I had that death in the family, it was so much was going on. And for 3 days, I didn't sleep because we were just dealing with the burial, traveling over to Mexico, trying to get everything together, right?
Yeah.
What ended up happening was that I woke up and I just got this whole like pressure. Like it was just like a headache, but it wasn't a headache. I was shaking and I was just like, I couldn't control it and I couldn't breathe. And I was just like, oh my gosh, you know, but one of my other cousins that she deals with anxiety, I went and I was like, oh my God, I was like, I can't breathe. I don't know. Like, I don't know what's happening to me. And I even thought, I was like, somebody, cause over there we believe in the evil eye. I was like, I think somebody gave me the evil eye.
Totally.
I think
something happened.
I was like, I was like, I don't know why I'm feeling this way. And I seriously, and I started thinking like, oh my gosh, I sound like my friend, like my, I don't want to say her name. I was like, I sound like my friend right now. I was like, but that's exact. I couldn't control it. And it was like, the more I try to control it, the more like I started shaking. And my cousin, she was like, she's like, you know what you're experiencing? She's like, nobody gave you the evil eye. She's like, it's anxiety. She's like, you're getting anxiety. Yeah. She's like, you haven't slept. And she was like, you know what? Drink a Coke. Take an Advil and have some tacos.
Drink a Coke.
No, but like I'm just trying to. I'm just trying to portray like the that people aren't aware of how you know what I mean. Because that was what she told me. She's like, you're having an anxiety. She's like, drink a Coke, take some Advil, and have some tacos. And she's like, and take a nap. She's like, and you'll wake up fine. She's like, just try to relax and breathe. And because she's experienced it before, she kind of was breathing, and finally I was able to calm down. So after I calmed down. And nothing was wrong with me. I wasn't sick. I didn't get a flu. I didn't get a cough. Nothing. It was simply an anxiety attack. I felt so guilty because I got a flashback from my friend when she used to get anxiety.
Yeah.
When I used to think it was fake. When I used to think she can't control it. When I thought she was being weak. And it was at that moment, I wasn't being weak. It wasn't like I was having a weak moment. I literally just got up, And then, like, I don't know, from everything, it was just that anxiety and that, you know, that
you were in
thing.
A difficult experience.
And I couldn't. And it was like I was trying to control myself. And now I remember. So when I got back to the States, that was one person I called, and I was like, hey, I'm so sorry for ever saying that you are weak, because it's not something that you can control.
Well, it's very nice of you that you did that.
You know what I mean? And she actually helped me through the process of, like, stopping. But, like, I just want to, like, coming from you, like, it is something real. It's not something that you control. It's not something that you, like Jyoti said, you don't choose this. Like, you know what I mean? It just kind of, like, happens. And it's it happens in a emotional that turns into a physical form.
Absolutely.
Situation.
Yes.
And that's actually where I wanted to talk to you about how it can affect you physically. That's a great way to leave it off. That's what I want to talk to her next about.
Yeah. So mental health and physical health are very related. The brain, nerves, the brain essentially controls everything in the body. Your heart beating, being able to breathe. While you sleep, you're still breathing. The brain controls all this. The brain's the most important organ in the body. So if it's not well, and you're anxious and you're depressed, it can affect you in many ways. Sometimes people who have chronic pain disorders, it's related to mental health, or people who aren't able to be as functional, it's related to mental health. So taking care of the mental health really helps physical health, and there's studies to prove it. So someone who has depression that's untreated, they are 50% more likely to die of any cause. That's...
wow.
Yeah, that's...
that's crazy. I didn't even know that.
Immense, 50%. People who have coronary artery disease and depression, those who have the depression are more likely to pass away. So it's almost as... I think the study said something like, the depression is worse. The untreated depression is worse than the coronary artery disease. And there's so much about coronary artery disease going around.
And that's we don't hear about depression.
Yeah.
It's like coronaries, your coronary.
Yeah. And so also there's this other study that if someone has chronic diseases like diabetes mellitus, COPD, cancer, or any vascular diseases, if they have these chronic diseases and depression on top of it, they're 5 to 10 years, they're likely to die 5 to 10 years earlier.
Wow.
So depression takes off so much more time, and it leads to death. I mean, this is not a joke. This is not a choice. This is not just a mood, but depression, it just affects your energy, your motivation, your emotions. It's so deep. And so I'm really passionate about spreading this awareness, not just for some people's mental health, but also for their physical well-being.
I'm sure it can drain you. I mean, it definitely can drain you. You stop being social. You're living in your bubble. And we're going to take a break. But when we come back, I want to talk about how depression is hit really hard with ethnic people, but they don't talk about it because, one, they don't know that they're depressed. Two, they're embarrassed. And three, like, what are they supposed to do? So we're going to go ahead and take a break. We'll be right back.
Can I begin?
Make room for the queen of Hindustan.
Hey, it's Raja Kumari.
I did it all by myself.
And you're checking out Ruckus Avenue Radio.
All right, guys, welcome back. I have Jasmine Singh, a.k.a. the Jazzy Doc, here. We were just going over... why she chose psychiatry to be her field of study. I don't know what I was going to say right now. her field of
specialty.
Specialty. There you go. And we were just talking about stats and how mental health really does affect your physical health. And but now we're going to talk about something that is really important to me as well as Jasmine. It's about mental health and the stigma in Punjabi Indian American community as well as Hispanic community. I think any ethnic community.
Yeah.
But I know that you specifically studied it in the South Asian community, right?
Correct. I did.
And you said it's one of its kind, the study that you did.
Yeah. So my study, I was drawn to it because I personally am Indian American.
Yeah.
I'm Punjabi. And so that's the lens through which I see my world. That's
of
my,
course.
My, yeah. Mm-hmm. So I was lucky enough to have some patients. So luckily enough, not for them, obviously, but I'm really passionate about why those patients had these problems. So in the summer of 2017, I was a psychiatrist for 9 Indian American patients who were psychiatrically hospitalized in the unit where I was working. And after they were discharged and I looked back on their chart and I did a case review on these patients. And so some of the patients were adult patients who had were immigrants from India to the US. And the other patients were American-born Indian American children whose parents were immigrants. So I looked at these patients and they were all Punjabi. And I published a poster and presented it in New York City at the American Psychiatric Association's meeting in May of 2018. And at that time, there was no other study or paper on Indian American mental health at all.
I believe it.
So I'm proud of this work, but it was kind of difficult because these patients, they look like me. They have names like my family's names. Yeah. And so it was emotional, but I think I'm onto something, and I think it will be very healing for our community. So I found that in my results that the patients reported their family as a stressor, and they cited cultural differences between themselves, the child, and the parent as a chronic stressor in their life. So the Indian American child versus the immigrant parent, they find that this relationship was very difficult for them. Cultural differences, ideological differences. And so I continue to research it, and I've learned quite a lot, but it's kind of difficult because family is so important to us.
It really is.
And we emphasize it so much. But I found that, you know, these issues in the family, between parent and child, along with some other stressors as well, like immigration, assimilation to the American culture. Immigration's a trauma. And coming to a different country, a new place, people you don't know, you might be isolated. You have to learn a new way of life, new social norms. So that made a lot of sense to me, why that would be a problem. So, and then of course, lack of mental health knowledge, lack of access, to, you know, all these different things. But I really, I thought a lot about these issues, that why would family and the child-parent relationship cause mental illnesses to come up and come up in such a way that they'd be psychiatrically hospitalized.
Right. And it's the most important relationship you have.
It is.
The most closest.
It is.
Blood.
Yeah. It's the closest relationship, and it's forced me to think about how can we fix this?
Of course.
So since May of 2018, and you know, when I first saw the patients in 2017, I've done a lot of reading, a lot of work on this, and I'm still formulating my thoughts, but I think this relationship of the parent and the child, it's so important, and it should be based on nurturance and security. And if the child feels they can't go to the parent with some issue, that creates a sense of insecurity and a sense of pain and emotional suffering. And that can cause, these things can cause anxiety, depression, substance use. So yeah, that's what I'm working on.
Yeah, and I want to actually point something out where you said, you know, them coming to a different country. I've actually said this in one of my episodes that they don't think it through sometimes. Like when it comes to, you know, us being American born, different parents are all different. But I feel like they want to hold on to culture and everything, which is great. But they don't realize that you came to this whole country, you're adopting, your kids are going to school here. That you should maybe adopt as well as we're adopting. Like, yes, we'll take in culture, but you need to be a little more lenient as to things that we want to do or we think is okay. So I, for that part, you know, being born in an Indian family, I think about now and I'm like, okay, I'm not allowed to do this. We are not allowed to do that. But like, I'm born here.
Right.
You can't wear that. I'm like, but they sell it. You know what I mean? But like, what do you mean I can't?
Yeah.
You know, Susie's wearing it.
Yeah.
And so you don't think in the way that they're thinking. And I think that is a lot of pressure.
It is.
Yeah. And I think they think keeping us locked in sometimes is going to solve all our problems. But that's not. You know, if you just tell me I can't go out, I'm just going to sneak out.
Right. Yeah. So there's a lot of things that you just mentioned that I want to touch on. So I think immigration, from what I understand so far, it is primarily and most prominently a financial decision.
Of course.
So I think someone who doesn't have enough wants a better life, they go to the US or Canada or the UK, Australia to gain more in their life, to be more to be wealthier, to have more security financially. And that's just such a need. That's our basic human need, to have food, clothing, and shelter, that these other topics of cultural and, you know, that's just not thought of.
Yeah, we don't think that. Yeah. They didn't think it that through.
No, they didn't. Yeah. And that's fine. You know, that's that's the struggle that they had. And it's a very difficult one.
100%.
And I think it's amazing to go from one country to another and set up life in a new place.
It's great.
It's amazing.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
We wouldn't be
Mom and Dad.
Yeah. We wouldn't be here doing this.
Yeah. I wouldn't. Mm-hmm. I don't think I'd be a doctor if my parents didn't come to the US. So that's kind of one issue. Now, taking that into consideration, we have these children in this new culture. And it's such a struggle. I think I've personally dealt with it, that you get one kind of ideology at home. You step outside, maybe a different ideology amongst your friends at school, something different on television. When I was young, there were no Indian people in TV. As you know, and even now our representation is limited, but it's getting better.
It was like a boo, and you were like, "I don't stop calling me that."
Yeah,
my dad doesn't have an accent,
right?
You know, but that was our that's a whole different thing.
That is a whole different thing.
Yeah, but that was all we had.
That's another discussion. But it's very difficult to manage parents who maybe are pressuring you to be a certain way, and they're bringing their old culture with them. But you're spending your whole day at school, 8 hours at school amongst other people.
Exactly.
And the American culture is different. And I've actually done some reading on this, at the, you know, Indian cultures and even Hispanic cultures, ethnic cultures in general are more collectivist, meaning their focus is on the family, the community. You have to do what's best for the community. And you do what's best for in the religion, and you have to think about everyone. You don't think about yourself. Versus in the American culture, it's so individualistic. You do what's best for you. Work hard to progress yourself. And so these are such deep differences in the two cultures that how can you reconcile? So there's so many struggles having immigrant parents and American-born children, that of course it would lead to conflict, and it would lead to stress, and it would lead to children feeling that they're not heard and they're not understood. And that can affect people's, you know, the children's self-esteem, their self-worth, and can very easily lead to depression and anxiety and substance use.
No, and you were, what I saw here were some sample quotes that you personally heard from.
Yeah, I have.
They were, I'm going to read them off.
Yeah.
That guy killed himself. He had a weak mind. All they need is exercise and prayer. As you said, a Coke and an Advil. It must be black magic. My mom says that to
really?
Me all the time. I met this psychiatrist once. She was so normal.
Yeah, psychiatrists, as if all of them are abnormal,
yeah,
right?
No. And they make them look kind of crazy sometimes on like movies and stuff. Like they're just like, "Hey, Susie."
Yeah.
And you're just like, I don't want to go see one of her. You want to be doctor for crazy people?
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah.
Psychiatrists are crazy too. Psychiatry is not a field of medicine.
Yes, it is.
Wow. We don't do things like therapy. It's okay. My parents were like, "You want a degree in business? Why do you need a degree in that?" I was like, "You do though."
Oh my gosh.
Because they just buy a business. You know what I mean? They're like, "You don't need a degree.
You'll figure it out."
Yeah. Indians don't get those kind of problems. Mexicans don't get those kind of problems.
Yeah.
Mental illness is caused by lack of willpower, faith, bad karma. So you must have did something in your past life. That's what my mom says if I like something bad happens to me.
Yeah.
Or I didn't take my car to the Gurdwara. Like one time something happened to my car. She's like, "You didn't take it to
church." After you bought it.
Yeah.
You mean? Oh.
She's like, "You didn't take it to church." And I'm like, "They do oil changes there? Are they for free? Like, well, they changed my tire."
Yeah,
like,
so
I'm
funny.
Down. I'll go.
That's so funny. Yeah. I would like to say, you know, Indians don't get these kinds of problems. The World Health Organization did a study where they found that India is the most depressed country.
Wow. No way.
Yeah. Can you believe that?
That's crazy.
So depression is rampant. And those people are just stigmatizing against it and the treatment for it.
Again, putting it on the rug. We don't get those problems.
No.
We're macho.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Well, there you have it, guys. Their whole family must be crazy.
You know, that is that, like in our Hispanic culture, it's the same thing. Like I was telling her, and we even talk about this sometimes, like even outside of this.
Right.
It's like when you like when we went through a trauma and like, you know, and people do need maybe mental health or they need awareness. They need something to cope with whatever they're going through and understanding, because like I said, it does physically, you know, drain you as well. When we asked a particular person to go, she was offended. She was mad. She was like, oh, so now you think I'm going crazy? Now you think I'm going crazy? Now you want to send me to a crazy doctor?
Yeah.
I don't need that and blah, blah. And it's it is going back to like the roots and people not thinking that it's an actual field. It's
right,
like they think it's just like something that it's like, you know, have some fresh air or whatever, you know, anything like that, which is so crazy because like I said, it is something real. It's something that people are going through, but it's like, how do we spread that? How, what is something that you would say like, you know what, this, because it is real. If people are, if there's studies that people are being depressed, 50% of them are more likely to pass away or something that's going to happen.
Right.
It's something that's happening. So what is a word or something that you would say like, this is it? Like what? Because there's studies out there. There's proof.
I think when you hear psychiatrists, they think crazy equals crazy.
Yeah.
Psycho.
Yeah.
You know, psych. That's what I think.
So this topic of combating stigma, there's a bunch of stuff online about it. There many people are talking about it. And I think that's where the change is going to start through education.
Yes.
Through educating people that this is not just you. This is not just something that'll go away. This is becoming a problem and it's affecting your well-being. It's affecting your ability to go to school or work. I think at that point it becomes a livelihood issue. Like I, you know, I mentioned, if you are not able to work and provide for yourself, you can become homeless and you can be victimized. I mean, it's just thinking about what you're, you know, how are you living your life? Are you functional? And how can you help live your best life?
Yeah.
And anxiety can really be a detriment to that. So I think through education, through compassionate explanation, and I just think that eventually everyone's going to figure this out, that this is a real problem, considering I think the media today also is doing a better job of explaining this issue. So I think things are getting better, and just being compassionate and explaining, try it out. Just try to go to a psychiatrist. Yeah. Try a therapist. You can always, you know, stop going. And it's not a, you know, it's not going to change things overnight. You need to really invest in care. So trying it, being open to new possibilities, I think is, and education is a way to combat stigma.
And to let them know that a psychiatrist is a doctor.
Yes, and that's the biggest misconception.
It is.
They went to school the same amount of time as a doctor.
Yeah.
But I think they just think like, here you go. You guys just did an online test and now you're like, because I think that's what old school, you know, people think because... The last two quotes actually are gonna fall into my question. I wouldn't want my family married into that family. She went to a psychiatrist. Now she won't ever be able to get married. So, so that to me,
real quotes,
real. That's crazy to me. But how she's saying, like she's whoever that person was like, oh, you're gonna send me to a crazy house. And there's people saying things like, I don't want to be married into that family, or they're not going to be able to ever get married.
Right.
So I wanted you to kind of touch base on like the pressure, the guilt, the embarrassment. Do you think it has to do with just being old school? Do you think it's just that's all they know? Or what are all the different variations of why they say things like this?
I think it's all they know and they have never experienced it themselves. So I think both of you guys, before experiencing it, you were also not really aware of what it meant and what, but then it, once you were mindful enough to realize, oh, I'm getting anxious, or, oh, this is a panic attack, something, this is real. And this is very distressing. I think once the experience happens, that's very educational.
Of course, 100%. Cause that's exactly where, but you know what the crazy thing is? Like for me, I've always believed in power of the mind.
Yeah.
What you think, what you know, what you think will manifest. So for me, as a person that's constantly reading about like uplifting myself and becoming a better person, blah, blah, blah. But yet anxiety, that's fake. you need to go more into the power. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's just something that is ongoing, I guess. And we just have to experience it to be able to do it. But
right. So uplifting quotes, power the mind. That's all wonderful. Mm-hmm. I think that's a great way to focus on something positive, to uplift yourself in the moment. But going through difficult things, mm-hmm. there's no quote that's going to change yeah. the trauma. There's no quote that's going to bring back a loss of a person. Yeah. So in those situations, it just gets, it gets beyond the scope of mm-hmm. just a quote. So I think it's great people are always focusing on their wellness, but this is also a part of wellness. So
yeah. Of course. No, we're so we're going to go ahead and take another break, and we're going to talk about shame and guilt in our Indian American culture, about how people like to make us feel like you should be ashamed to have mental health issues or to do this or do something that's against, I feel like, what they don't believe in. So we'll be right yeah. back.
Hey, it's your girl, Kay Ray. Listen to Ruckus Avenue Radio at DashRadio.com and download the Dash Radio app for complete access 24 hours a day, 7 days a week to our station.
All right, guys, welcome back. We're here with the Jazzy Doc and Lucy Legend. We were again into some deep stuff about cultural differences and about them understanding mental health and how they kind of don't get it. And we were talking about it does have to do with, you know, them coming from an old school background. And Jazzy was saying that she thinks that it's all about time and being educated about mental health. But before we get into more deeper stuff, we wanted to talk about shame and guilt in our Indian American culture, about how to talk about mental health, to say there's something wrong with you, how that guilt plays and has a play.
So there is this whole line of research on shame cultures and guilt cultures. But I just want to make a small statement about that, that it is a way of controlling behavior and kind of the typical method of functioning in these cultures. And I think both are very prevalent in the Indian, mm-hmm. Indian and Indian American cultures.
100%.
And so, you know, shame, oh my gosh, what will people think? Or guilt, or how could you do this to me? These kinds of feelings that parents or uncles or aunts or grandparents are promoting in their children and grandchildren are problematic. And it makes the child feel so empty and unworthy. And these feelings can lead to anxiety and depression. And so this pattern of feeling so empty can lead to substance use. It can lead to any kind of substance use. And so I think that this is a problem. And in turn, if the child feels this way and they go to their parent and then they're shamed for having mental health issues or shamed for even thinking about it, I mean, it's just double the trouble. So I think being more cognizant of why you're saying what you're saying, how that person will feel when you say that, is very important.
I don't think they think of that. I think they only care about what they feel.
Right.
Because I have gone through that where my mom would project issues that she's having with my dad on me. Mm-hmm. If you were a good daughter, your dad wouldn't be doing drugs. My dad said he didn't say he does drugs because he never admitted it. But he's like, I wouldn't be drinking if you were a good daughter. So imagine as like a 16, 17 year old hearing that.
So hard to hear.
Yeah. And you're like, what do you mean I'm not a good daughter? What am I not doing?
Right.
And it's just like at that age, though, you don't know what projecting means or right. you don't think about these things. But now I'm like, I get why you were doing that. Mm-hmm. But yeah. Or if I'm not home or something, you could have stopped your dad from drinking. And I'm like, what? Like I was at school or I was yeah. at practice. And yeah. I think it really, really does. Like you said, substance abuse. So I discovered drinking at like around the age of 20, before 21. Mm-hmm. And when things like that would happen, the way I would want to numb myself, going out partying, but you think you're just having fun, you know, right. But what I really was doing was I'd be mad and I'd call my friend and then we'd go out drinking. Right. And now as I've gotten older, when I realize when I'm like, I've had a hard day, I want to drink. Mm-hmm. It's because that's what I've always done.
It's a pattern.
Yeah.
It's a coping mechanism.
It's definitely a pattern. And I think some people don't see it as that. Like, oh, I need a drink. you don't really need a drink. You know, you can go get some air, drink a Coke, pop it.
Go see a psychiatrist. Go to a therapist.
Actually, Lucy, so how about in your culture, like, do they give you that guilt treatment as well?
100%. And like when, and I think that's like when I went and said back that I slapped my friend because she was having that an attack. It's in our culture. It's like, what are, you have your food. You have a roof over your head. You didn't grow up in the slums. You didn't do this.
Right.
What are you depressed about? What are you, what's your anxiety? Like that you're just being weak. You need to find something to do. Go play some soccer. Go do this. That's our healing. You know, we're being weak. And that's truly what people think. It's like, if you need a psychiatrist, you're a loony. You're crazy. And it could literally be for the, it's not even that you're crazy. It could literally just be, not that you're having evil thoughts. Because of course there's people that are going to need a different level of psychiatry where, you know, they're thinking suicidal. That's different.
Yeah.
But they think that it's that extreme by you just having a simple, like, let's say, like, you know, you're depressed about something small. And I don't want to say something small because everyone's level is something. But let's say I'm depressed about, you know,
A breakup. Right.
You know, that a breakup, you being depressed, that's just you're not doing enough with yourself.
Right.
You're not busy enough.
You have a roof. You have a.
Yeah.
You have food.
Yeah.
Who cares?
Yeah, I think that's exactly. The essentials.
So yeah. That's a thing. So if I were to even go over there and talk about I need a psychiatrist, are you kidding me? It'd be like, what?
So I do want to make a distinction. Yeah. I think this is an amazing example. Yeah. Breakup is, it's my kind of go-to example because you lose a connection. You lose a source of support. You lose affection. And humans are wired for affection. We're wired for connection. So actually studies show that when you gain human contact and connection, our brain chemistry changes.
Yeah.
And when we lose that, it also changes. It changes for the better when we have more connection to other people. So let's say you have a breakup and it's, you're a little down, but you're still able to do what you need to do. And that's fine. Like maybe you don't need mental health treatment, but if it gets to the point where you're not getting out of bed, you're not eating, then you really need to seek care. How do you plan to get out of that rut? So
you can't keep lying to yourself either. Like, I'll be fine.
Right.
Because you don't, like you said, I mean, I've had points where I've felt like that. But in you don't even know that you're capable of feeling like that sometimes.
Right. And it's hard to explain. Like, do I have some really bad medical problem? Is what's going on? I have no energy. I can't sleep. I'm not hungry. I keep worrying about the same stuff. It's a very difficult and painful disease process to go through.
It really is. I feel like as experienced, like going through like a big breakup, I feel like I start talking to myself instead of talking to someone. I'm like, what's wrong with you? Are you crazy? Like I'll start thinking that. I'm like, maybe I'm just like a psycho person. Like I just get so attached to people, you know, and you just start self-diagnosing yourself, but you do it in a way where you're putting yourself down, I feel like. And I think that's also a problem with mental health. I think you start thinking, like we've been saying, there's something wrong with you. Yeah, you don't realize that everyone goes through these things. And people like to relate. So I think that we, like you said, we need to talk more about these things. So people,
definitely.
So people know that you're not alone. You're not crazy, as they say. If you are crazy, everyone is a little crazy.
I mean, who's normal?
Yeah.
Like, what's normal? Who's normal? Who defines what's normal? Like, how can we, that's so judgmental to say I'm normal and you're not. That doesn't make any sense. And it's so, there's just no compassion in that. So I think we're all crazy. We all go through traumas and traumatic situations, and we all don't grow up, you know, in a perfect environment where everyone is, you know, everyone has everything. So I think we need to just be compassionate towards others and ourselves.
And to know that feelings are real. And it's like, feel like, it's like when we grow up, and I know that this may be a little much, but like for, I have a son, I have a little brothers and stuff like that, right? So I don't like giving them Advil. I don't like giving them like Tylenol or something when they're sick. And this was one of the biggest arguments that me and my mom had because I don't like doing it. And the reason that I don't like doing it is because when they're feeling sick, here you go, take an Advil. Oh, you have a cough. Here you go. Let me give you this. Oh, give me that. So what happens when they're teenagers? What happens when they start going through these depressions? What happens when they start going through anxiety? Their Advil is going to be alcohol. Their Advil is going to be drugs. Their Advil is going to be all this other thing. And I'm not saying that that's the root of it, but people don't realize that feelings are also, can also be treated. So they go into a substance that thinks that's going to be that's going to be the treatment. And in reality, a psychiatrist, a talk, a healing process, whatever it may be, those little things.
Exercising,
all of those things can go on to be. So I think the main thing is feelings can also be turned around, just like we can turn a cough around. And that's one of the biggest misconceptions people have.
You bring up an amazing, excellent point. Feelings and emotions originate in our brain. Mm-hmm. It's not just a temperament or a personality issue. Mm-mm. It's in our brain, and it's how we go through the world, how we perceive the world. Mm-hmm. This is all very rooted in our brain. But also this point of not looking to the outside to fill something on the inside, like pills or alcohol, to soothe yourself.
Yeah.
I think that's a great point that you've figured out seemingly on your own, that it's great to not rely on other things to change yourself, but to figure out what is the correct use of medicine and judicious use of medicine, and how can I use that well and continue to make myself feel better. Mm-hmm. I think that's the way to go. So that's a great point you brought up.
Instead of relying on it.
Yeah.
Which I feel like, as talking about substance abuse, the things we were saying, how that can even lead to suicide. I don't think people think that far beyond about suicide. I think that's something really important that we should talk about, because I feel like a lot of suicide is a lot of self, like, guilt that they have. Because I feel like societal pressures, they think they're doing something wrong. Your parents are telling you you're doing something wrong.
Right.
And they're telling you that you're not doing something for them. So I kind of wanted to touch a little bit on how parents don't understand when you're telling your kids these things, that it might even, push them to do something that extreme.
It definitely can. Suicide is an epidemic in the U.S. 37,000 people in the U.S. and 1 million worldwide die of suicide each year. I mean, it's unfathomable how rampant this problem is. And it kind of goes hand in hand with how rampant depression is. Suicide is a component of being depressed. So depression that's longstanding, not treated, can lead to depression. And as we discussed before, the depression can come from a lack of self-worth, feeling worthless and hopeless and helpless. That comes from parents, or could come from parents telling their children, or being overly controlling, or being dictating. Yeah, blaming or dictating how you must live under this particular way. Or it could come from school. It could come from their peers. Mm-hmm. It could come from just a brain chemist. It could be someone's temperament. It could be who they are. They could have genetic diathesis towards depression. So suicide doesn't just come out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's true. I think there's signs and symptoms of depression before suicide, but it can come out of nowhere. But I think that if we're communicating with each other well, if we know how other people are doing, if we can...
Feelings.
How they're feeling.
Yes.
And then we can know more about their thoughts and potential behaviors of suicide.
Yeah. See, that's why I wanted to talk about that, because I feel like when speaking about guilt and things like that, or someone saying words to you being young or even older, they don't think about feelings like you were saying. And there's been times where I don't really talk about this, but I was like, shit, I shouldn't be here then. If I'm a bad daughter, I was like, my mom doesn't like me. My dad doesn't like me. Mm. What am I doing here? And then I'm having problems at school as well with girls. And I'm like, I have no friends. Mm. What is my purpose? I've been through that whole cycle. I thought about it. And I will say that I did think about it. And it had to do with not just one issue, but a bunch of issues.
Right.
And I had no one to talk to.
Yeah.
But I did, if I would know, you can talk to a psychiatrist.
Right.
So right. I really do encourage people, if you feel any source of those kind of things.
Definitely. You know? So please, if someone is feeling suicidal at this time, there is a hotline that you can call. There's websites. Talk to a family member. Talk to a friend. please reach out. And I think, you know, considering your own experience, one of the major feelings that can lead to suicide is hopelessness.
100%. Mm-hmm.
But the instant rejection, I don't understand it. I can only hypothesize that maybe it's cultural and their parents did the same thing maybe to them or their siblings. And it's just been a behavior that's passed down through generations. This idea of either you are the way we prescribe or we're going to reject you. And that is another way of trying to control the child. I think it is inhumane. I think it is the worst thing someone can do is to have their parents turn their back on them. 100%. Our parents are our primary caregivers. They teach us about the world. Their affection makes us feel like we are okay. If they don't look at us and treat us like we're worthy, then we question our own self-worth. This is some very high level, deep psychiatry reading that I've done. This is more therapy based theories that I've been reading through to try to expand on my own work. And so the parent-child relationship is so important. And if it's not a nourishing relationship, the child goes into towards mental illness and substance use, because that is the way they want to treat the emptiness they feel, the worthlessness they feel. So if we can change that, if we can think, I have a dream that all children, whether they're Indian or Hispanic or Middle Eastern or Chinese, any child should be able to say, man, I have a problem. Thankfully, I can go to my parents with this.
Oh, right?
And I think that's where it needs to start. Like, I've heard things like that. Like, me and Jyoti were talking about that somebody got rejected as a parent. Me as a parent, I can't relate. I cannot understand how you could do that to your children, right?
Right.
However, what I told her, I was like, I can understand why they would do that, because as a parent, you don't have all the answers.
They
don't come with the manual.
Yeah.
There's mm-hmm. been times that, like, not that, and then, like I said, when you hear in the news that people kill their children, do the worst situations to the children,
right.
like however it may be, it's not that. I don't think it's okay. I don't think it's mm-hmm. right. So this is the first thing mm-hmm. I want to say. I don't think it's right. I don't think it's right.
Right.
I think it's wrong.
Yeah.
However, the problem is that those parents have not sought the right therapy, have not sought the
yes.
right, and those parents have their own problems that they just don't know how to handle it.
Right.
So for them, it's easier to, like, you know what? One less problem. Get out of here. I don't know how to deal with you being gay.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, when that kid can't stop crying, so they throw him across the thing, that
right.
mom couldn't internally know how to handle that, so
right.
she handled it that way.
Right.
You know, and at the end, because I do, as a parent, I would say, even though they kicked you out, even though they threw you across the wall, whatever mm-hmm. it may have been, because as a mother, you are connected, I do feel that there is some type of love. There is so much, but you as a person don't know what to do with it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's what causes the rejection. So it's just like
a personal issue.
It's a personal issue that
right.
unfortunately it's been passed down to the kid, and now it's going on to the next kid. And,
yeah.
you know, and it's a whole chain reaction. So the first thing would be these people need to seek that therapy if you're going to
yeah.
have that children. And that's why even when we're talking about abortion, I don't blame anybody for not wanting, you know, a child mm-hmm. and not going mm-hmm. through with it, because it's a lot more than just the child.
Yes.
It's in a whole emotional process.
Right.
You know, so.
And I think you, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I think
ahead.
You, you have some great points that the parents maybe aren't able to handle their own anxiety, their mm-hmm. own fear, their own
yeah.
anger, that they just want to run away from it.
Yeah.
Or have it go away.
Yeah.
It's a very, seemingly, it's a very quick and easy response. And, oh, this is bothering me. Get it out of here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But let's think about this for a second. You know,
be honest with your kid.
Right.
I don't be like, I don't know what to do right now.
Yeah.
So give me a minute.
How beautiful.
Yeah.
How beautiful would that be?
Honesty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Honesty, communication. And I think society is more aware today
mm-hmm.
than it was before. We've 100%. Kind of woken up to these problems. They've become such an issue. And so now we're like, hey, let's look at this. So I think having these kinds of discussions and really being mindful of our own thoughts, behaviors, and feelings can help and prevent these sorts of problems.
Well, thank you. So you guys, this concludes our part one with the Jazzy Jocks. So next week we're going to go ahead and have part two, and we're going to talk about a lot more things and a lot more details. So thank you again for coming, Jazzy.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
No problem. And this is Lucy Legend and this is Jyoti K. And you could reach out to Jasmine if you ever have any mental health issues, any questions, any concerns. I'm sure she would
absolutely
welcome you open arms. Okay, guys?
Yes.
Thank you.
Hi, this is DJ Amita. You can check out RuckusAvenueRadio.com for more information and for the latest on station programming and more.